Siete sintonizzati direttamente con David Lee Roth. Che ne dici di un po' di fuoco, spaventapasseri? You're tuned directly to David Lee Roth. How about a little fire, Scarecrow?
I want some of what he's having. Roth Radio, David Lee Roth in attendance. My very special guest, Val, sitting in from Dallas. How are you this morning? Good looking?
I'm doing all right. Can I say this one time?
You can say it one time.
Holy hell, I'm sitting across the console from David Lee Roth.
Live in front of your naked, steaming
ass.
There
it is. All right.
In the hottest seat in all of international radio. You know we're broadcasting worldwide here, Val. We're on DavidLeeRoth.com, from sea to shining sea. And here's somebody who reaches from sea to shining sea. Animal, how are you this morning?
Hey, right, boss. How you doing this morning? Had a great weekend. How about yours? You all right?
Outstanding. I stayed up through the whole thing. Be
oh,
young.
Man.
How are you this morning, baby? Let me hear that guitar one time. Oh. All right, let's get down to reality here.
Yeah.
We have a very special guest who's coming up at about 8:15 this morning. Val, are you familiar with Omarosa? Let me see if I can even pronounce it this early in the week. It's not even this early in the day.
Try
it's early, early this week. Omarosa, Manigault, Stallworth. What does it ring a bell in you? What can you think of a certain bell?
High maintenance.
Higher maintenance than tropical fish, probably.
The Apprentice.
Omarosa is the most famous for her stint on the first season of the reality show The Apprentice, starring Donald Trump. Donald was actually the star until she showed up, I think.
I agree.
I think that she absolutely created a whole new genre. She has something that is entirely... It's supposed to be reality, but I think she defined a specific character the way Clint Eastwood defined a specific character. The way Marilyn Monroe defined a specific, or even Stallone is better. These people are the same no matter which picture they're in, and you look forward to that, right?
Right.
You know right away that if there's going to be, you can think of it, Aykroyd or, Bill Murray or something. They're the same kind of character in each thing. Most reality, it kind of fluctuates, you know, but I think Omarosa invented a specific kind of character. Agreed?
Well, yeah, when I think reality TV, I think Omarosa. The most popular contestant, would you agree?
Well, what kind of a character is she specifically? If you had to, I'm going to ask her. When she comes on, I'm going to ask her to specifically define what that archetype is, because I think now there are a lot of people imitating what she's done. There's several different kinds of reality. There's everybody else's and mine, for example.
I agree, right? I'm with you.
There's my reality and my accountant's reality.
Right. Mm-hmm. A little bit of a difference there.
There is my reality and my last three relationships reality. There's different kinds of reality shows, I think. If you have the documentist approach, I see that there's something new about the bull ridings. PBR is is the happeningest thing on television. You come from Texas.
Absolutely.
You know that this is a major sport now. And I see that there is a reality thing that follows, I think, three fellas behind the scenes as they pursue the belt buckle or, you know, whatever it is.
It is the buckle. Very good.
The finals or whatever. Curious that the biggest cowboy finals happen in Las Vegas now, huh?
Everything happens in Vegas.
They have it, I think it's in October, is the big rodeo finals there. And I'd be very interested to see what would happen behind the scenes for the bull riders, because I know that they're not going to act. They're so focused on just getting to the next city. They're so focused on just keeping their tibia and fibula connected. Don't even ask me where those are supposed to connect.
But. No. Hey, you got the medical background, not me.
Well, those are the guys, you know, who are completely focused on what they're doing. And it would be like following people around NYPD or whatever. They're not going to act so much for you. But then you have like what goes on in MTV now. And there are very specific kinds of archetypes. I think that's the actual term for it, right? You got to have the, you've got Omarosa, and I'm going to let her describe, you know, what her type is or mm-hmm. the kind of role she generally plays. You've got to have the outspoken, angry gay guy.
Absolutely.
You remember when Bill Clinton said he felt Pedro's pain? I don't remember what episode that was. And then you got to have the nose picker. That's Puck. And I think Puck.
Everyone remembers Puck.
Well, that's everybody's.
Right on.
Everybody is smiling co-conspiratorially here because he was the first guy, I think, arguably the first guy to go on reality programming and create his own character and act out his own script within their script. Do you follow me so far?
Got it.
Have you had enough coffee to keep up with?
I have had no coffee. I'm ready for caffeine.
Okay. I suggest Red Bull. This entire show is propelled by Red Bull sugar-free. Anyways, Omarosa Manigault Stallworth. What kind of a name is Omarosa? Which language is that? Is that like African? Is that Afro-American or is that Arab? Or?
You know, she's very proud of her African-American background.
Oh, certainly. Well, she was, she worked with Clinton Gore, and she was Deputy Associate Director, Presidential Personality. This is a very bright young lady. This is a very clever and dynamic gal. And it says here, currently, Omarosa is teaching a course in reality TV in L.A. What do you think that's involved? What's in the curriculum that you think, Val? What's if you show up through the door and you sit down, Omarosa walks in, and what happens next?
I'm at a loss for words because it's funny. Before you told me what she was doing, I was going to say, you know, she made her definitely made her big splash.
Well,
but where's she been lately? And obviously, the answer to that question is she's going to teach people how to make a big splash and then disappear.
I don't. Well, no, she's not disappearing because she's on our show, and evidently she's traveling everywhere. And this is a really popular issue. She's doing the whole handshake. You know, tireless self promotion
right.
is the American way. I think. I'm wondering if she's actually going to teach how to get your own reality series started, how to produce it or direct it, or is she actually talking about creating a character and somehow sliding it into the proceedings?
I'm curious to know how similar in personality she is, if what she portrayed on Apprentice is definitely her real personality, or if it was a built-up character and this is indeed what you're going to learn in her class. How to exaggerate you are.
If she's really good, we won't be able to detect the seams.
Absolutely.
If she's got that character 100%, it's the Keith Richards, Rolling Stones kind of ethic. You got to be even more so offstage than what you are onstage, all right? Because that's what generates the drama. That's what generates the theater. You got to be able to relate to her. And I think there's I don't want to try and define her character until she gets on. I think I know what it is. And I'm always tickled. Whenever I hear she's involved in something, I know there's going to be fireworks.
Right.
I know there's going to be drama, but what I call harmless misdemeanor drama.
I'll give you that.
There won't be actual bloodletting or whatever. Whereas, who was the supermodel? The one who keeps saying Janice Dickinson. You familiar with who Janice
Absolutely.
Is?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
With Janice, there may actually be bloodletting.
I'll go with you on that. Yeah.
I think they were both together, actually, in The Surreal Life. Are you a fan of The Surreal
Life?
They did.
Life? Was that the VH1 thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
What's the Surreal Life? It was those two. And I forget, fellas in the back there, if you know who else was involved in the in that cycle of The Surreal Life. Oh, the little guy, Mini-Me,
right.
was part of that as well. This is an interesting trio. Who's putting together these kinds of casts? Do you remember who was on with Omarosa Manigault? Who was in that episode there?
Jose Canseco, the steroid baseball guy.
Steroid. Yeah. Well, he played the baby. See, these scenarios are always structured around a family. And for example, Canseco was the big baby.
Right.
He was that kind of the baby Huey. Omarosa, if involved, she was in. Was she actually involved in that cycle? I believe she was, right?
Yeah, she was in that one.
So she would have been the mother. And who would have played the dad? Oh, there was Brady or something like that was also involved.
The Peter Brady.
Who? Christopher Knight.
There you go.
So he would have played the dad. What happened to Canseco? Is he still working the perimeters now? Have you seen him on TV? Have you seen him on the radio?
No, he disappeared. He's disappeared, yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Only in court when he did his testifying on the on the steroid use, and he was writing on his book.
Well, court is an actual public appearance now. That doesn't qualify as a legal whatever. That's
yeah,
an
right.
actual.
It like, is.
That's right. It's
with court TV?
It's like your own
right.
television show. Mm-hmm. And you get to have, you know, Michael Jackson trial was its own television show. I'm very curious as to what Omarosa, she's going to be visiting us at about 8:15. And a little bit after that, we got a gal coming up from New York Post who's going to share with us. What's the actual topic there? I think it's that married men are better. Is that what it is? Step up here, Dukes.
What? Yes, we are.
Yeah, she's got why you should date only married guys, and then her column today is about dating black guys.
And is she? Well, look at Animal light up.
Look at him light up.
Yeah, you see that big globe over my head now?
He went radiant, and your IQ went down 14 points, huh?
13.
Oh, my goodness. Her name is Elizabeth Haight, and she's coming on at about 9:15 here. Don't go away. She writes a column for the New York Post, and why married men are hot. What is this? Does she write like a sex column? Is that what it is? A social thing? What is it, Dukes? Tell us.
Yeah, she's a single mom who lives in the city, and she talks all about dating and what it's like to date. And she's very open about her relationships.
Is this a daily column? Is that what that is?
I think it's weekly. Once a week, Mondays.
So she actually goes out and lives what she does.
Yeah.
This is more reportage?
Yeah, like she'll talk about internet dating and how she just meets guys sometimes online and visits their homes.
So, but is this like Sex in the City where she would actually go live it and then like reportage like Hunter Thompson or something or, you know, and then come back and write it down as sort of a third person kind of thing? Like it might be her, but we aren't really sure, but we are?
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Okay, so she's dating a black guy this morning. Is that?
Well, I think she had some bad experiences with black guys.
She had some good ones or some bad ones?
Well, probably both, a little bit of both.
With the same guy?
I think various black guys.
It happens, yeah.
Various black guys. Isn't that the guy who sang for Hootie and the Blow? Oh, that's Darius Rucker. Okay. Why married men are hot? Well, I've used it as a pitch, but I've never been married. But I should be married, so. Anyway, Elizabeth Haight coming down. She's about 9:15. And she's the one who wrote a book called I'm No Saint. This sounds interesting. We've got an interesting... diet coming up here.
Sounds like my autobiography. I'm single, so I'm curious as to why I should be dating black men.
Animal, you want to speak
Animal?
To that? You
check it out. Look at all of that, girl. If you grab a hold of all of that, you will not fall off, baby.
So, Val, let me ask you. Are you attracted to black guys?
You know, I got to tell you, I've never dated a black guy. But
Why not? You have a southern accent, vaguely. Does that have to do with it?
Well, I got to be honest with you. Raised in an all-white town in small-town Texas. But no, that's never bothered me whatsoever.
What small town in Texas?
Small town called Santa Fe, Texas, between Houston and Galveston.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And did you have a black community there?
The town next to me was all black, so that made for an interesting football game whenever the two of us did get together.
Did you ever go over there and party like with Otis Day and the Knights in
Animal
House?
No. I had friends, but I'll tell you a little story. The guy that lives across the street from me is a firefighter paramedic, which that alone makes him sexy, okay? He is one of the best-looking black men I've ever seen in my life. So let's just say the view out my front window is quite nice when he's mowing the yard. So I'm interested to see what Elizabeth has to say, because I just may be heading home to give Nick a call.
Yeah, but I tend to think more than Nick the firefighter. I was thinking more like Mike Tyson.
I've had my share of lunatics in my dating past. Yeah.
Okay. Anyways, Omarosa coming up. Something here that's of general vibration here. Fox employees sue over toxic studio airs. Two Fox News employees have filed a lawsuit claiming they were sickened by air contaminated with toxic molds and pesticides while working in the building where the O'Reilly Factor and At Large with Geraldo Rivera
that explains a lot.
Are produced. Do you have a cold? Who in here has a cold? Well, we finally covered up all the walls and everything here, but that's been a major issue of mine here. How many folks actually are working in places out there, I wonder, that have no windows at all, that have no kind of ventilation at all? And we brought this up about Ground Zero just recently, too. You know, we see folks in the news, especially on New York One. Okay. We're broadcasting from New York to a lot of different cities here, but a lot of the fellas who are working down there are coming up with a lot of the asthma and so forth here. It says... two Fox employees say in court papers that the inappropriate use of cleaning agencies, pesticides, etc., caused them headaches, dizziness, weakness, anxiety, blurred vision. Hey, that sounds like Sunday morning to me.
Mm-hmm. We deal with it in the building in Dallas I work in.
What happened?
Well, the building was built, if I'm not mistaken, late 50s, but since the company owns it, you know, they're convinced that it's a cheaper way to go. We're going to hang out there. And, you know, primer can only cover black mold so many times. Eventually, it's going to come out.
Yes, absolutely. You know, if you look over in the other room over there, you can see that you have exposed fibrous insulation kind of working its way all around. And everybody sits around rubbing their noses like junkies. Well, the methadone clinic. But I understand there's about to be some improvements made, et cetera, et cetera. So, all the news that's fit to print. You want to go for the commercial?
A little early, Dave.
You didn't think?
Yeah.
Go ahead and hit it up one time.
Spit up.
Pamier and Canela. What am I talking about? Can you tell me?
Say it again.
Pamier and Canela.
I have no clue.
It's Pamela Anderson and Kanye West.
Dating?
Now that's fireworks. They'd make the oddest celebrity couples. I don't know if they're actually dating. The pair first got together at the Something House Studios in L.A. But this is now news that showed up on Page Six. This is now news that showed up in a number of places. Kanye got cozy with Pam, taking off his shirt and flirting for the camera. There were definitely sparks. I guarantee you they're going to make it happen.
Well, she's used to well-endowed men, and you know what they say about the black men.
No, what do they say?
Go ahead, you have the mic.
Tell me, Animal, what do they say?
See how big my hands are, girl?
Makes for big gloves, huh?
It's real.
I think she's just kind of run out of all the lead singers. She's saving the animal world, and Bono is saving the real world, so she's going to move off into something else here. And former Daily News gossip says they were spotted all over each other, making out all night. What do you think? Are you a Pamela Anderson fan, Animal?
Yeah, I kind of like her, you know. I like those, you know. Remember the time we was at your favorite waterhole and she came over and introduced herself to us and
yeah,
stuff?
Yeah, of course.
Well, but she looks good off camera, too. I thought maybe on camera, you know, you looked so good, but she did. She looked hot off camera, man. I was impressed.
She looks like she looks on camera. She looks exactly the same.
Yeah, she does.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
That's a very good thing, you know.
Because Pamela grew up in kind of stages. You have early Pam for when she first came out of Canada. And then you have mid-phase Pam, and now you have current Pam, just like with Anna Nicole Smith. You have first phase Anna, then you have mid-phase, and now you have current. Which one do you like best? Anybody?
I like the mid-phase when she was
first
thick.
Phase.
I like her a little big, because she reminded me of Marilyn Monroe. Well, obviously she does, and so I like her a little hefty. She's a little too thin now.
Now, did she get a stomach stapled or one of these inflatable things or something like that? Or did she go through the Jenny Craig diet?
No, she did the Trim Spa. Trim Spa, baby. Do you like my body? You don't remember that?
Yeah.
No, what is that?
Oh, what award show was she on? Animal, you remember that?
Yeah, I remember the commercial, like, do you like my body? Like, I don't remember the name of the drug she was on. What was it called?
It's Trim Spa.
Trim Spa is actually a drug?
Yeah.
What kind of a drug? Is that a diet drug?
I think it's a diet drug, but I believe she took too much of it because she can, like, real skinny to me now, man. I'm talking about,
I'm wondering if it was just Trim Spa that she took, that she's going to go ahead and lose all of that.
Oh, no, man. But she ain't hot to me no more, man. She lost too much weight. But she's still beautiful, though.
She actually lose the weight, or did she do what that other gal who, like, gained so much weight and did Fat Actress, the series, and then now she's doing a diet commercial?
Kirstie Alley.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She actually diet, or she just get a better cinematographer?
I think she was dieting.
I'm serious.
Dieting and dancing.
Yeah, well, dancing, you're not going to really lose it. Your body will certainly adjust to that quick. Anybody who's watched celebrity ballroom dancing or whatever can pretty well testify to that. I'm wondering if she actually did lose the weight, or in fact, if you didn't get a whole lot of digital editing and a lot of lighting and so forth. Always curious. The same thing for Anna Nicole. You know that if you can edit creatively, that you can go through this frame by frame, you can make still life come alive. Curious. I'm going to watch it with that in mind, because as we discussed earlier, I don't know if there's a shortcut. I don't know if there's a pill or one little thing, because if there was, I'd be eating a Big Mac right now, man.
David Lee Roth in the mornings.
Roth Radio, baby. Give me the whip crack one time. Ow! You hear that guitar in the background? That's B. Young, live in the studio there. Go! Roth Radio, I'm David Lee Roth. My special guest, Val, sitting in from Dallas, Texas. Homeboy wouldn't be playing like that if it wasn't for one particular musician coming out of the 60s. Go ahead, play it a little more. Go ahead, let him guess, babe. All roads in funk music lead back to Sly and the Family Stone, right?
Yeah,
you can
absolutely
trace it all. In rock and roll, all the roads lead back to either the Rolling Stones or Led Zeppelin or the Beatles. And in funk music or in black popular music, all those roads go right back to Sly and the Family Stone. Turn it up a little bit. I'll sing you the hits. Wanna take you higher. Wanna take you higher.
I'm everyday people.
How does it going? I wanna take you higher. It goes.
You wanna do it? I can play it.
Do you have that one, actually?
Oh, you bet your life I do.
Go ahead, spin that one. This is the greatest one-note tune. This is the greatest one-chord tune in history. It's only one chord, right?
Eagle.
Sweet. And then we would practice this, right?
Now the note is only two.
See, I never bothered to learn the words. Oh, it was the third tour before I even know the words to Running with the Devil. Sly and the Family Stone, one of the greatest funk bands ever. I think they stole the show at Woodstock. If you go back and you look at the movie of Woodstock, you know, it was classic white rock and roll. I mean, even Jimi Hendrix was playing white rock and roll at the time. I don't know. Is there such a thing as white rock and roll? It's all blues-based, isn't it?
It's all rock and roll, baby.
Well, no, it's all black.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's true.
It's all black is what it is. But it was white rock and roll. Even arguably Carlos Santana was playing, you know, stuff that was blues-oriented, whatever. Sly and the Family Stone came up, and I think they were basically the only real black band at Woodstock, weren't they? The very first one? Can you think of another black band? Richie Havens was doing folk music.
Right.
Who else was black at the first Woodstock? Anybody? You can't even think of it, can you?
Nope. Sly and the Family Stone was it, I believe.
That was the very first. And that's what was being played in the hood at the time. Now it's considered kind of pop music. You know, it's considered mainstream, main course kind of stuff, especially compared to, like, gangsta hip-hop or what have you. But if you listen, all the kinds of grooves that the bass players are doing, all the stuff that the guitarists are doing, still feeds back to him. And there's a real old story. You know, when History for All the Wrong Reasons. In fact, let me just start with this. According to a press release from the Grammy Awards, there's going to be a special tribute to Sly and the Family Stone at the February 8th Awards. Like the Beatles. It's like the Black Beatles. Virtually everybody knows at least 2/3 of the song list, even if you weren't born during the time. Do you got favorite songs, Val? Do you got a Sly and the Family Stone fave? Is there anything that sticks out to you?
No, you know, actually, little before my time. Can recognize the songs, but as far as titles, uh-uh.
Well, one of the reasons is because Sly disappeared. He did a Axl Rose, is what he did. He, inarguably, he ran into a whole lot of drug issues, okay?
Yeah.
And this is the thing, when he does, if you think back to the song Family Affair, when I'll sing it to you. Give me a little track here, brother. And play the track a little bit.
I got it.
No, don't play that. Play the loop here. Play the loop.
Go ahead.
And he goes, one child grows up to be somebody loved a bird. That's a family affair.
There it is.
He had a serious blow problem. No, seriously, it ruined him. It's ruined a lot of bands. He had a serious cocaine problem. And to a point where he wouldn't even get out of bed. And he would do like Hugh Hefner, which in the 60s was the cool thing.
Right.
Run your empire from a big circular bed. And at the time, Sly, this is a well-known story now, was living over on the Pacific Coast Highway in Los Angeles, and he had set up a quote-unquote home studio. Well, today, that's, you know, no biggie.
Right,
you know, you, you get your Pro Tools and a G4 and, you know, whatever.
Right,
and
you're good to go.
You're really good to go.
Yeah.
At that time, that was novel and new. Stevie Wonder was just starting to do records where he played all the instruments. Nobody had ever heard of that before.
Mm-hmm.
Paul McCartney had done it, but certainly nobody in the, you know, the funk community. And Sly never got out of bed. And he did major, major deals and stuff like this. Ruined his band, ruined his career, became a recluse. And they actually rolled the microphones up, and he would sit on the side of the bed and call that his studio. And that's why he talks like this. What child knows up to be somebody you love the bird. Dope. Ruined another great band.
Mm.
I ran into him at the 7-Eleven. Right near Barney's Beanery. Animal, you know where I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know where Barney's Beanery is.
Over at Santa Monica Boulevard.
Yeah. But I know another story about him, man. Like when I first met him in 1989 or whatever.
Go ahead.
It was really bad, man. He was like on the corner of Wilcox and Sunset.
Yep.
Living under the building. I had to like chase him from around the building. Then I like, man, that looked like Sly.
That's right.
And then somebody told me it was actually him. And he was like, you know, after the guy was working for a girlfriend, you know, he still had a thing for girls. And they used to make me chase him all around the corner. Then when I found out who he was, you know, I was just trying to help the dude. And he was actually living up under the building. That's God, heaven, truth. I couldn't believe
sure,
it, man.
Sure. You're not off base there. I ran into him probably late 80s. He had been gone for many years at the 7-Eleven, like at 1 in the morning, right near Barney's Beanery on Santa Monica Boulevard in the heart of Hollywood. And I came around the corner, and he was buying some candy bars. And I said, Sly. And he goes, David Lee, like that. And he dropped the candy bars, and he bent over to pick them up, and his wig fell off.
Oh, man.
Oops.
Oh, man.
Sly has had a checkered career his entire life. He was the one who got married on stage at Madison Square Garden back in the early 70s or whatnot. And I think he was one of the first of the real day glow, really bright color, something, you know, that crossed out of the neighborhood. Everything up until then, perhaps, was what I grew up with in integrated busing, which was all Temptations, Four Tops, Aretha, Supremes, Marvin Gaye, you know, all this kind of material. And I think it was Sly who was the first one to open it up into it cross-sectioned. It wasn't just one community. Yeah. You couldn't say it was black music. You couldn't say that it was white music. And that's why he was at Woodstock there.
Yeah. Oh, Dave, I think he was the first one to also have a white member in the band, too, right?
Oh, it was the drummer.
Drummer, yeah. He was the first one to do that.
Yep.
Yeah, and then everybody started catching on, you know?
So the man keeping the beat was the white man in the band.
Actually, yes, for a while, I think it was a girl, too.
I don't know if it was a white person. I don't know if it was a girl or a guy, but it sounded good.
For a period of time, it was a gal, too. You bet.
Right on.
His sister sang in the band, and he had produced a whole bunch of material. He started off as a disc jockey in San Francisco, okay? Sylvester. Sly Sylvester, I think it was his name. And he produced a whole bunch of people. The Times, You Little Trust Maker, you know, this kind of material. And then he just disappeared. What happens to these guys?
Drugs.
That's probably what it is, huh?
Yo.
That's a sad way to go, man. I've seen a lot of good musicians pass through the eye of that needle and not come out the same way they went in. Sad stories, huh? Yeah. But now they're talking about he's going to maybe, well, here it is, typical. However, sources told the Post that rehearsals are scheduled to begin next week, though nobody was willing to say how things would pan out. Typical Sly.
Yeah.
He always gets his fingers around the brass ring. This is a guy, have they made it into the Hall of Fame?
Do you know
if Sly and the Stone? They must have, right?
Yeah, they must have.
Absolutely, they must have made it into the Hall of Fame.
I wonder
if he showed up to actually collect the award. What do you think? Who knows? Scare it up there on the internet, guys, and see if Sly and the Family Stone actually, because if they didn't, then they're going to be. Clearly, you know, if you have this much kind of contribution. And people still are sampling the stuff. People still put, what are you saying, Dukes?
They were inducted in 93. the Family Stone showed up, but no Sly.
Ah, there you go. Is he so reclusive now that he's just never going to come out? What happened to Axl Rose? That's the same kind of turnpike.
Well, hey, man, you can answer that question. Look how many people you dealt with through your career. I mean, were you at any point tempted to just lock yourself up in a room and never talk to anybody again? I mean, that gets quite annoying.
Well, I think probably the most extreme example of that, Val, would be Elvis. I call it doing an Elvis, where you literally carry tinfoil around with you to put it in the windows. Perhaps the same thing happened to John Lennon.
All right.
From the Beatles, where there's so much grabbing, there's so much calling for attention, you know, so many people to deal with.
Right.
And each person needs to be validated. You don't dare walk past somebody, dismiss anybody, because that's they're going to show up on Page Six the next day or in the internet or what have you. But I think probably getting high is probably what ruins these guys the most. We're going to talk about Chris Penn coming up, too. Looks like the same kind of diet, huh? I want to talk about Axl Rose when we come back after this. Go ahead, brother. Swing on. Listen to that voice.
Somebody that just loves to learn and
another child grows up to be.
What's for breakfast?
Somebody you just love to burn
is a family affair.
Mom loves the both of them.
Roth Radio.
You see, it's in the blood.
David Lee Roth, weekday mornings.
One child grows up to be. Somebody that just loves to learn, and another child. Somebody you just love to burn.
It's a family affair.
Mom loves the
both of them. Then some Sudafed. Then let's get some Coruscant.
Both kids.
I can barely breathe. I can't breathe
blood
over here.
Stick up in the mud. It's a family affair.
Yeah. It's a Roth Radio family affair.
I'm David Lee Roth. I got Val with me, sitting in from Texas. Val, how are you this morning?
I couldn't be any better.
You're drinking a little Red Bull here.
You know what? I just told you, I never had Red Bull without vodka in it. Oh, it's pretty damn good.
We started off drinking just the vodka and Gisano got between us and progress.
Well, I was so desperate for caffeine, I said, I'll foot the bill. Somebody go.
Anyways, we're talking about the Sly Stone at the Grammys, or we hope. The Grammys are coming up on February 8th, and they're saying that there's going to be a tribute to Sly and the Family Stone, which is all roads in funk music lead back to Sly. It's just inarguably all roads in hard rock music lead back to Led Zeppelin. All roads in pop music lead back to the Beatles. But they generally show up, those guys, or at least they're still walking around. It's arguable of whether or not Stone, Sly, born Sylvester Stewart, is actually walking around. Is he still alive even? Do we know?
Yeah.
Well,
sorry?
He's alive.
He's alive.
Yeah, How do you know that?
Well, apparently he has been approached by some of the management. Nobody's confirmed it, but he's been approached and he's still around. And
okay, but as Animal was describing earlier, he's been homeless for a number of years, around the Hollywood area, the Los Angeles area. And I saw him once, maybe late 80s, and ran into him at a late night convenience store there. And he was not in good shape, so... Sad, huh? And I was describing earlier, you know, when you hear the song Family Affair, that was that stage, you know, when he stopped leaving his house entirely. He became a real recluse there. Be very curious. This is going to be Vegas odds. we can bet on this.
Actually, yeah. Well, you know, if you won't show up when you're inducted into the Hall of Fame.
What they do then, Val, I think is if you don't show up, or if you show up like the guy in Creedence Clearwater Revival, Fogerty, he refused to sing with the band because there was that issue that they had taken the publishing, or all the songs that he had written, he had lost the publishing to his brother and refused to give it back. There was that acrimony between the band members.
Those damn temperamental artists.
You know, I think it's temperamental accountants and temperamental managers more than anything here. And then I brought up the issue of Axl Rose. Are you an Axl Rose fan, Val?
Absolutely.
Okay. Axl surfaces. And again, this is a guy who's having trouble with his public appearances, even when there's public appearances. When was the last time he went on the road? How many years ago was that? Like 2004 or something like that? What was
2003?
Yeah, it wasn't too long ago.
And that canceled the show because, remember, me and you was making fun about it. Never travel on show date. And he got caught up at the airport and missed the show. Remember, you always said never travel on show date. Remember that?
Sure.
Yeah, it was like 2003, I think. And they canceled the rest of the tour after that.
Well, they canceled a number of his shows, didn't they? Matt, how many of those shows did they actually cancel? Like half the tour or something, didn't they?
I think they only did six shows. One, I actually saw them in Boston.
Oh, how was the show? This was Axl Rose with which band?
It was Guns N' Roses. Axl Rose with Buckethead on guitar.
Stop, stop. That's not Guns N' Roses.
I agree.
Stop. Truth in advertising here.
And let me correct myself. Not an Axl Rose fan, but a Guns N' Roses fan.
Okay,
there
Guns
go.
N' Roses right, yeah. With Axl Rose as the quarterback.
Absolutely.
I need to have Axl as the drum major. I need to have Slash as the caboose. I need the guy with the kidney problem on the bass guitar. I need the dope addict on the drums. You know, this is that's
Steve
theater.
Steve Adler.
Well, it's all, you know, that's the theater of it, is that you're waiting to see combustion. Like, is it going to hold together, and are they going to make it through the drum solo, or is it going to burst at the seams like a frog on a hot plate?
Well, they had something like 30 shows scheduled for that tour, right? 30, and what did he make?
Well, he made them, but he would always show up hours late, wasn't he?
Dave, the question is, Al Dukes and I were talking, what would Guns N' Roses be if they had only made one record and disappeared and Axl had just gone? Would they be legendary, bigger, smaller?
Well, that's an interesting question because they only really made three albums, didn't they? That's Jimi Hendrix territory. He really only made three studio albums, if I'm not mistaken.
I think you're right on that.
And the rest of it is vault tapes and live stuff, you know, and radio, live at the BBC kind of material. But Hendrix only made three records. Guns N' Roses made three. One of them was a double album. We'll say it's four. I'm a little schizophrenic. That means a lot to both of us.
We got a note here, Dave. They last played in 2002, but they only played two shows.
And that was it? Was he late to those? Because that was a Sly and the Family Stone thing. I'm going to dovetail this here. Sly pulled the same nonsense many, many times, where he would show up 2 and 4 hours late for a show, routinely, at places like Madison Square Garden, at the Forum in Los Angeles, 20,000-seaters, etc. The exact same psychology or disconnection of psychology that's happening with Axl.
Now, that's not fashionably late when you're the lead singer of the actual band.
Well, maybe if it's in the 1500s, the Chinese emperor would routinely be 3 days late and everybody would have to camp at the palace and they would bring retainers and actually sleep in the positions they were sitting. I like it, but I don't think Axl is the emperor.
No, absolutely. Axl thinks Axel's the emperor. But
Maybe he doesn't think he's anything at all. Maybe there's a self-esteem issue.
Because it's a self-defeatist kind of thing.
It's suicide. If ultimately your promoters are going to refuse to hire you, look at Robert Downey Jr.
Right.
Same kind of issue. Spectacular actor. A list of difficulties as far as showing up on time for hair and makeup, so to speak. And now the insurance for him is like seven figures to do one movie. Consequently, only the most expensive movies, if they even want to take a chance with him, can afford to work with him. Even if you love Axl Rose, if he keeps up this kind of nonsense, you're either going to be forced to stand in line for a 500-seat club because that'll be the only place that it can afford. Okay, he didn't show up.
Right.
We didn't take too big of a loss.
Right.
Or, what, he's going to have to travel with a babysitter? Do they do that these days? Do you know? What would you do if somebody said, all right, Val, I'm going to give you, I don't know, let's create a crazy number, $10 million.
All right.
And you have to deliver Axl Rose to each one of 20 shows, okay?
Right.
Madison Square Garden, you know, the Superdome, whatever, okay?
Right.
What would you do to ensure that he gets there?
I'd reach down into my nightstand and brought the whips, the handcuffs, toys that I normally use to have fun to actually secure Axel to bring him. Yeah, you can't if he's made up his mind to destroy himself. There's no amount of money that you could pay anyone. There's no one that could get him there.
Well, he surfaces. Here's a great article about him in looks like Rolling Stone, and he's talking about the material coming up. What's the name of his new band? Matt, do you know the name
Velvet
of the band?
Revolver.
Get out of here.
No. It's still Guns N' Roses. The album is Chinese Democracy.
Stop.
Oh, that's the one.
That's not Guns N' Roses.
Reportedly.
Okay. Let's talk about truth in advertising. We're going to have a reality star, Omarosa Manigault-Stallworth, show up. She's going to call in about 8:15 this morning. She's a star of reality. I'm going to get her take on what is reality. You follow? I don't know that calling this band Guns N' Roses is reality.
How can he get away with it?
Well, he owns the name, obviously.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Obviously,
right.
There's a legal issue there.
All right.
Is it really Van Halen without Diamond Dave?
Never.
Okay. Is it really Journey if they have a different singer who sounds identically the same as the other guy? In fact, if you pulled you do a Stevie Wonder, you close your eyes, you don't know what building you're in, boom, you probably would think that it's Journey. Is that still Journey, or is that a different permutation?
Not the same thing.
Okay.
No, not the same thing.
Go ahead.
I think with Journey, it is the same thing.
Oh, you always preferred Memorex?
It's a tribute. It sounds exactly like him, so it's fine. With Van Halen or a band like that, you can't change David Lee Roth. You can't change Slash. Mm-hmm. That's a whole other issue. This is a tribute. So as far as a listener, viewer, or whatever, I think it's okay with Journey.
Okay. Isn't the New York Philharmonic a tribute band? I mean, the last I looked, Handel, Beethoven, and Brahms were all dead guys, right? Not a single surviving member of anybody's rhythm section. All three of them, the rhythm section is dead. The groupies grew up, died. The tour bus was taken apart. It's sitting in 15 different museums around the world. They're dead. Yet, we still buy the T-shirt every summer. We still dutifully drag our little soccer kids out onto the green so we can watch them. And if the music is pretty good, and it sounds kind of like we think it should sound, because I wasn't around back then, but, then, I don't know, maybe these bands are okay. Maybe it's okay for Axel to put together Guns N' Roses. He legally owns the name. You know, it's like the guy owning the name Ford,
okay,
I guess. More than one person owns the name Ford. But if he wanted to take the name Ford and just start making shoes, then I guess he could do it. Is it all right for Axel to call it Guns N' Roses? If it's Sly and the Family Stone and Sly is not there, can you call it Sly? How about this one? You a Queen fan, Val? Are you?
Yeah.
Okay, clearly, you know. Is it okay to call the band Queen when Freddie isn't there? Because they have a whole nother sound now. Not even close to what was before. Arguably better, middle, worse, who knows? But it's not Freddie. It doesn't sound anything like him. It's the fellow from Bad Company or Free, Paul Rodgers, right?
It is, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Now, and why would you want to put yourself in that position? Why, if you're a Sammy Hagar, do you want to walk in and go, I can do this better?
Well, Sammy thinks he was kidnapped by aliens at the age of 15. You know? No, I'm not kidding. We'll discuss that right after I beam up.